did the late Anthony Sutton, Trilaterals over Washington. Patrick Wood really encapsulated the technocracy, coined that term. I don't know if coined it, but certainly brought it into our consciousness of what it means. And in 1974, one of the people on the Trilateral Commission, Richard Gardner, says, in short, the House of World Order, didn't say New Order, but said House of World Order, will have to be built from the bottom up rather than from the top down. It will look like a great, booming, buzzing confusion, but an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. In other words, you know, death by a thousand cuts. Patrick Wood is an author, a lecturer. He's studied the syndicate globalization policy since the late 70s. We are very happy to welcome him. His website is technocracy.news. His new book, Technocracy, Hard Road to World Order, taking an allusion to this quote by Richard Gardner. We're very glad to welcome Patrick. Patrick, welcome back to the Power Hour.
Hey, Daniel, good to talk to you again. Some of your listeners may remember me, by the way, for the one or two times I got to fill in for you when you were out doing something else. That was a blast.
Absolutely. We'll have to, if you want to do it again, we'll do it. We'd love to have you on. People love you.
Well, we have.
My wife likes you.
We did.
Yeah, my wife likes you, and that's how I judge things, really. Most things in my life, if my wife likes you, then I like you.
That's good.
Well, for better or for worse, that's what it is. Let's talk about this book. We had Deborah Tavares on a few days, and she scared the heck out of people. Let's add some substance to this. Let's put some framework about this. Tell us a little bit about why this book now compared to your book you've written previously.
Well, you know, I wrote about 3 years ago, I wrote Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. And that book is that kind of started my modern trek here to expose technocracy. And this book is more than a follow-up to that. It's I wrote this book to be directed more to the average person who may not have, you know, all of the interest to tackle a more complex book like Technocracy Rising. So I made this a little bit simpler to read on purpose, and I made it a little bit shorter on purpose, so it's a little bit shorter to read, but I'm bringing in all of the current manifestations of technocracy so that people can see right now, looking out their window, yep, there it is, I see it, you know, like they can identify with what's going on. So, you know, we talk about surveillance. We talk about you know, practical things like blockchain technology and fintech, and you know, things that are happening. The surveillance stuff is happening in China and is coming here, and you know, all these things really add up to a picture that has to be seen in the whole. You can't just look at one little part of it and say, "Oh, I understand it." You won't understand it until you raise your horizon and look at the bigger picture, and not only what's going on in our country, but also around the world as well. That's what I'm trying to do with the Hard Road to World Order. And I have to say, Richard Gardner started this whole thing. He was not responsible for the world order. He was a member of the Trilateral Commission, only expressing their collective, you know, their consensus view of what they're trying to do. They wanted to create a new international economic order. Gardner just simply wrote about that. But here we are 40 plus years later, almost 45 years later, and I studied Gardner and all the rest of those people way back when. I just had this urge, Daniel, to finish Gardner's essay for him, if you will. That's a little presumptuous, right? But, you know, this guy said a lot of stuff back then. I don't know if he regrets saying it at all, but I regret that he said it. I regret they took that position, because we warned people back then. Watch out for these guys. These guys are up to no good, and we explained it pretty well. But Gardner, as you just quoted, that wasn't a real long article, but he said a lot in a very short period of time. And this whole business about booming, buzzing, confusion, does anybody identify with that today? I say ought to. We identify with an end run around national sovereignty eroding it piece by piece? I think we can. Well, here's where it comes from, folks. This is it. This is where the whole genesis of this thing started, and it's getting worse. The problem. It's not done. Well, it's not over. It's getting worse.
Well, let me start with a question. Let me kind of frame it this way, because your topic, your book, and your research is so important, ladies and gentlemen. Patrick, I firmly understand that and believe the importance of this. And when you talk to, you know, like your friends, your neighbors, your especially family members, and you would tell them, hey, there's a group of people who want to totally control our lives and to take the mankind and reduce them basically to a technological asset and a control grid. That's a big statement. Maybe that's the end. So let's start from the end and work backwards, because I certainly can't get people from where we are now to... Let's reverse it. Start at the end. How would you characterize, what is the goal of this technocracy? What is the end game of it? And then let's work backwards on the fingerprints that we're seeing that have led up to that.
Exactly right. That's the right thing to do. And by the way, if I was a college professor, which I'm not, but let's just pretend I was, and I was on my first day of Technocracy 101, and the whole, there was 500 people in the class, and they had to take it, and they all came in, and they're sitting there, and I had a textbook, set up, like Technocracy Rising or Hard Road. And so I asked them to raise your hands. Everybody that has the textbook in hand, raise your hand. And a bunch of them would raise their hand, and then a bunch of them wouldn't, probably. And I say, okay, all the people don't have the book yet, raise your hand. And I say, how many people are going to get it today? And a few of them would go down. To the rest of them, I say, if you're not going to get the textbook, get out of the class. You know, it's like, you're not taking this class.
Mm.
You need to study this. You can't understand complex issues by looking at a bumper sticker, if you know what I mean. You have to dig into it, and we're digging into it. That's good. But I just want to say that just because somebody listens to our interview, don't think you know a whole lot about technocracy, because you won't know much. You'll know a little bit. I'd rather you know something than nothing. But if you really want to understand it, you have to read. You have to study. And you have to spend some time with it. So here's what technocracy was way back when. It's the same thing now. 1938 definition of technocracy is just as good today as it was back then. And here's what they said. Technocracy is the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population. That was it. That's the simple definition. The science of social engineering. That's what we see all around the world. In our country, we see it in China, we see it in India, we see it in Europe. Technology is being used by these technocrats to engineer society and at large to fit their model of reality. That's it. Social engineering. The science of social engineering. Secondly, we see in this definition that the target is the entire social mechanism. Now, in America's case, that would be us. We're interested in us, not so much China, but the social mechanism are you and me and everybody else, no person left behind. They want everybody in the system. That was very clear from the beginning. And the object of it is to produce goods and services to the entire population. We see technocracy brought into the current context by the Trilateral Commission in 1973, but we see it having morphed into the United Nations, thanks to the Rockefeller family, as sustainable development. It's a resource-based economic system, sustainable development. Technocracy and sustainable development are equivalent. And I make the case in my book with even actually a complete chapter dedicated just to that, to prove that they're identical. Sustainable development today has swept the world. Everywhere it appears, you have the science of social engineering popping up immediately. You have surveillance popping up immediately. You have citizen control popping up immediately. You have goods and services, the whole production consumption spectrum, trying to be controlled by these people. This is exactly what sustainable development is all about. But it's global now. It's not just in America. It's all over the place. In essence, if I could sum this whole thing up, I would quote the former head of climate change at the United Nations. Her name was Christiana Figueres. So she was the one that ramrodded the Paris Accord a few years ago on climate change. She said at a press conference a couple of years ago, this is the first time in the history of mankind that we're setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution. And these are fighting words. What she's saying is sustainable development exists in order to replace capitalism and free enterprise. This is what technocracy wanted back in the 1930s. And this is what they're calling for today. It's a complete reset of the economy and the monetary system to convert it into a sustainable development / technocratic technocracy system where all production, all consumption would be controlled by them. And people say, wow, is that possible? Well, they think it is. I don't like it. I don't agree with it. And I think it's absolute nuts. But you have 193 nations in the world signed on to sustainable development. It's okay. Yeah.
Let me interject here. Let me interject right here, because this is an important point where people, you know, right, for justifying this, right now people are using climate change and using that as an excuse. In 1938, I don't think that was the justification. What was the justification that originally had
the depression.
To control our lives?
It was the Depression, the Great Depression. That was the big presenting issue of that day. You know, after the 1929 crash, everything kind of went downhill from that for many years. And except for World War II, the economy really floundered. You know, it looked like it wasn't going to come back. And a lot of people believe capitalism was dead in a doornail, especially the scientists and engineers at Columbia University who decided by themselves, we need to create an alternative economic system that can save the world. That's what they did. They came up with technocracy. And it was an otherworldly type of economic system, but it was very, very popular back then. And everybody pretty much hated politicians, right? They blamed the politicians for their economic malaise, as always. And, well, politicians and banksters, too, I suppose. But there was a lot of anger against capitalism and against the politicians. And so the technocracy crowd had an easy play.
There's the music. On the other side, we'll continue with this and then with up to now. What is the hard road? What does the road look like that they're making here? We'll be right back. PowerHour.com. Stay tuned. Who's is Patrick's website, the book Technocracy, Hard Road to World Order. You know, these people, they have an order. They want things done a certain way. They want your will, your life, your dominion, your agency, your freedom, because they know better than you. What does that sound like to you? I know what it sounds like to me. But let's go back to 1992, Patrick Woods, the Rio conference.
Well, the idea here, Daniel, is that in 1992, Agenda 21 was created at the first Earth Conference. This was a United Nations summit. Most of the nations, almost all the nations unanimously of the world, unanimously signed on to Agenda 21, including the United States. And the promise of utopia was all over. They were going to eliminate poverty. They were going to have jobs for everybody and the decent housing and lifelong education opportunities. Basically, they put forth utopia. And they said that, oh, this is a global effort. You know, this is, we've got, everybody's participating in this. You know, everybody had input and all this kind of stuff. That was, could not have been farther from the truth. It was 17 people essentially created Agenda 21 that was presented to the world for basically an up and down vote. And I want to underscore the hypocrisy of Agenda 21 because it had nothing to do with the promises they made. There was a group of young people that were allowed to participate in all the meetings leading up to Agenda 21. They couldn't vote on anything. They didn't have any input, but they were young, but they allowed them to audit. You know, it's like, hey, we want you to see what we're doing, what's going on, yada, yada. One of those young ladies was asked to get up and speak at the end of the conference. And she did. And her speech left the congregation absolutely speechless. And I need to read you just a small segment. It won't take long. So she said, it has made them, the poor people, he said, worse still, it has robbed the poor of the little power they had. It has made them victims of a market economy that has thus far threatened our planet. Amidst elaborate cocktails, travailing, and partying, few negotiators realize how critical their decisions are to our generation. By failing to address such fundamental issues as militarism, regulation of transnational corporations, democratization of the international aid agencies, and equitable terms and inequitable terms of trade, she concluded and sat down. She said, my generation has been damned. Whoa. 18 years old. That's what she said. They were speechless, Daniel. And I contend that this young lady's sentiment, and she wasn't, she was from Kenya to Nairobi. She was an environmentalist, as a matter of fact. So, you know, she's not like you and me saying this. She was saying this from her perspective. She went there with high hopes and high expectation that her complaints were going to be addressed. And she said, far from it. What you have just done, gentlemen, you have damned my generation. This is what's happened with Agenda 21 ever since. It's disingenuous. It's backwards. It promises utopia. It says it's going to save mankind. It's doing just the opposite. They're raping the world, literally, economically. They're destroying everything that man stands for, essentially, and dehumanizing people. And the world is far worse off today than it was before 1992. Not that we were in good shape in 1990, but you know what I mean. We've had more trouble since this happened than now. They were going to save everybody from poverty, for instance. Well, guess what? The line of poverty increased by 20% over the next 20 years. They didn't solve poverty. They never solved poverty. Yet they still
exacerbated it.
Yeah, they just exacerbated it.
You know, this sounds... We're coming on a break. This sounds a lot, what you said, what was coming to my mind. You said, well, I promise you utopia, everything will be good. We'll get rid of poverty. It sounds just like, to be honest with you, it sounds like Lucifer, right? Follow me. I'll make everything good. You won't have any of these problems. But just do what I ask. Just give me the control and everything will be fine. That's what it sounds like.
Is that too much? No, that's down in the fine print. After you get past all the utopia and the United Nations documents and you get down in the fine print, you find out all you have to do is just give up all means of production and all means of consumption. That's all you have to do. Shoot, that's nothing.
That's all.
You can trust us. You can trust us. we'll be good for you. Yep, that's just the devil, all right?
Mm-hmm. Technocracy.news is the website. Technocracy, Hard World Order is the book. More with Patrick Wood on the other side. Incredible purveyor of information here. So glad to have Patrick. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. ThePowerHour.com. We'll be right back. Very important information we're talking about with Patrick. His good book, Technocracy.news. You can buy it there. You can buy it on Amazon. Go to his website. I'm sure it's better for him if you go to his website, technocracy.news. ThePowerMall.com, you know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the different products. The Silver Shield deodorant's on sale, the REM Sleep, what have you, all the great products that you know. We have some closeout sales on some different things, some detox products, important, the phosphatidylcholine, of course. ThePowerMall.com, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. Thank you for your purchases. Thank you for your donations. Thank you for your energy and your prayers. That's what keeps us here. That's what allows us to bring people like Patrick on. There are people, it may seem like, you know, it's like, wow, we're getting overwhelmed. Why isn't anybody fighting? Joyce used to ask, why isn't anybody fighting? Well, Patrick Wood is fighting. And fighting the best way he can with the pen, with his mouth, with his words, with his energy, with his soul. That's what all this is. This struggle is a soul struggle right now, ladies and gentlemen. It is all going on. It is on like Donkey Kong, as the young kids say, and we're very glad to have Patrick here. Patrick, I know you had some other quotes from 1992. That was a real turning point for this whole Agenda 21, and you got introduced to our consciousness. Please share those quotes and then continue on, and I got an important question after that for you.
You bet. And I just want to demonstrate the disingenuous nature of where this all started. The book that actually started Agenda 21 in the first place was Our Common Future, edited and authored by Gru Harlan Brundtland for the United Nations. It was a contract deal, if you will. Brundtland was a member of the Trilateral Commission. This was Trilateral Commission policy that led up to Agenda 21 and beyond. And it was their policy, and which we know is corrupt from the get-go, by the way. Just remember Richard Gardner, okay? But there were some adults that were direct participants in the entire Rio proceedings, and two of them, Chatterjee and Finger, wrote a book in 1994 called The Earth Brokers. Now, I told you have to study this stuff to find out what's going on. But these two were direct participants in the UN meetings that led up to the Earth Summit, They wrote this book, and they said some very strong things. And they concluded that as a result of the whole UNCED process, the planet was going to get worse off, not better. And in their book, they wrote, in their opposition remarks, they wrote, "We argue that UNCED, that's UNCED, has boosted precisely the type of industrial development that is destructive for the environment and planet and its inhabitants. We see how, as a result of UNCED, that UNCED, the rich will get richer, the poor poorer, while more and more of the planet is destroyed in the process." That's a direct quote, Daniel.
Yes. What does UNCED mean? UNCED. What does that CED stand for?
Economic Development.
I had to ask.
The C. I'm skipping on the C.
United Nations Council on Economic Development.
Yeah, Economic Development. That's right. They were the principals of the Rio conference. So you get the idea. What I'm trying to point out here is that the people that went there with expectations that there was going to be something good realized very quickly that the same global elite that screwed the world up to that point were still in control of the process and were literally setting up a coup de grace to take the rest of the planet down. And that's exactly what they've done over the last 40 years. Go ahead.
Let me ask you this question. As you look out now, 40 plus years later, nothing seems to be slowing this descent or whatever you want to call it, this road down, not very much anyway. When you look out, what is the most important thing? What is the most chilling thing that you see that alarms you the most? Is it the Chinese social credit score? What is it?
That's related to it. I think that the most dangerous thing to us right now is surveillance in general. And the technocrat mind, we don't have time to explain this all together, I realize, but the technocrat mindset is obsessive compulsive with collecting data. They look at the entire societal mechanism. They call it a mechanism. It's like a machine. It's like a factory floor. They look at the world as one big factory that needs to be monitored in order to be controlled. Now, if you owned a factory or a warehouse or something, you'd have monitoring processes in place, I'm sure, to what you'd want to know what goes wrong if something breaks or whatever. But these guys are taking this to extreme, figuring if we're going to engineer society, we need to monitor society. We need to know everything that's going on. You say, well, how much is everything? Well, it's everything plus 20%. They could never get enough data. And if there's any data left in the environment, they're going to go after it in a heartbeat. And I want to reinforce this, I want to give you three of the original requirements of technocracy from the 1930s. This was in their Bible, their technocracy Bible called the Technocracy Study Course. And items three and four go like this. This, they said, we have to do this to make this work. Provide a continuous inventory of all production and consumption. Then they said, provide specific registration of the type, kind, et cetera, of all goods and services, where produced and where used. And then they said, provide specific registration of the consumption of each individual, plus a record and description of the individual. Now, this is still the goal today, to extract every conceivable piece of information about an individual, make a master file, and now with the advent of artificial intelligence, analyze that data and come up with presumptions, come up with new ideas about what that data means. Is Daniel Brinkman a troublemaker, or is he a good servant of the state? This is what's happening in China right now. China is going to, by 2020, China is going to have one camera for every 2.5 people in their entire country.
Oh, my word. They got 1.5 billion people. Holy cow.
They do.
Talking about like 400 or 500 million cameras.
It's about 20% of the country. And that's not, I mean, that's just that's one portion of what they're doing. They've got everybody involved in surveillance. I just posted an article today which kind of shocked me. All of the electric car makers in China, including Ford and Tesla, they both sell cars in China. The Chinese government has convinced them to send all of the location data from those cars directly back to the government. Isn't that cute?
Hmm.
If it ain't one thing, it's six others. I asked the question, Ford and Tesla, two American companies that have made their fortunes in America, and many times with taxpayer dollars, and as with Elon Musk. But here he goes to China and allows the Chinese to use their automobiles to spy on their citizens. Everywhere you look, China is spying on its citizens, and it's coming here too. People say, "Well, how is that happening in America?" Well, if you're not blind, you see how it's happening. Every day, something comes out new that just shocks the pants off of you. Delta Airlines just created a terminal, a biometric terminal in Atlanta. They're calling it a biometric terminal. Everything is done by facial recognition from the time you step out of your car at the curb until the time you get on the airplane.
Yeah, I saw that news. Oh. I saw that news story.
Well, every airport in America is going to be with us.
We got a couple minutes. Let me maybe phrase this question a little more, because this is a thought that comes to my mind. Obviously, you have this UN agenda, this world agenda, this technocratic agenda. It is in total contradiction when the rubber meets the road. The surveillance, the control, the purveyor of rights, what have you, is total contradiction to the Constitution. I mean, only one can survive. They're mutually exclusive. When I hear this, it starts ringing bells like that in my mind. What goes through your mind is concerning the Constitution with this?
They hate the Constitution. They hate the freedoms that we have, and in particular, they hate the Constitution because it is diametrically opposed to technocracy. Back in the 30s, I have to go back there again. Back in the 30s, they were very vocal about how much they hated the government. They wanted Roosevelt, when he got elected and seated, they wanted Roosevelt to declare himself dictator in order to implement technocracy in America, in North America. And they said, well, what would that look like? Well, they were very specific about it. They said, first, get rid of Congress altogether. Get rid of the House and the Senate. Send them all home. You don't need them. We're going to set up a hierarchy of appointed scientists and engineers just to run things directly. A president, forget it, you're fired. In the end, you're fired. You can be the continental director for a while, but we'll find somebody else that has technical ability. And it was a fantastic story back then, and people said, well, nobody's calling for that today. Oh, yes, they are. There was a book Global Scholar wrote years ago called Technocracy in America, and he called for almost the same thing.
Here we go.
He said, what America needs is direct technocracy. Just amazing.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back on the other side. Yes, it is. Technocracy.news. Patrick Wood. Stay tuned. I didn't understand this principle till Jordan helped me to see it. And I still don't fully understand it, but it clicked in me when he said this. all these plans and all these things, they're so overwhelming. And as Patrick will probably tell you when I stop talking here, most of the world's already gone and is bought into this and has given their will over to this collective, the socialist satanic collective. Jordan Maxwell explained that the only thing that is protecting America and really the world by extension from just holy hell just reigning over it is the Declaration of Independence. The universal power of the unanimous deciding of the will of those people and declaring that our rights come from God and that is absolute in the nation, that idea, will, and law is the one thing that is keeping the whole world from collapsing into this holy hell that Patrick is describing. And when he told me that, I just like, oh my God, it clicked in me, and I got it, at least that part. Patrick, how would you respond to that?
I would just carbon copy it. I would go ditto, ditto, ditto. This is exactly the case. These people, technocrats, absolutely positively hate the Constitution of the United States, and they detest the Declaration of Independence. They really do. They don't want people to have any freedom. Technocracy specified originally and sustainable development still does today. They want to wipe out property rights on a global basis. No property. They want people to be subservient to the state in all things, including the very food that they eat. They will manage people like a herd of cattle, rather than as humans, just as an impersonal herd of animals that need to be tended and cared for and moved from field to field. This is inhuman. It's anti-human. But they hate it. They hate us, and they hate the Declaration of Independence and what it stands for, and that's why we're under a full court attack right now. All from all sides, every conceivable side today is being attacked by these people. If the First Amendment goes, by the way, we pretty much lost everything. There'll be nothing left but the Second Amendment at that point. I don't want that to happen. Nobody does. But this is where we are today. I get emails from people, Daniel, from around the world, who are readers of technocracy.news. And by the way, every country in the world has come to technocracy.news. Every single country. I have statistics that show it. I couldn't believe it. People write me emails that understand what's going on where they are and other countries foreign from us in Europe and even in Africa. I got a couple from South America. And they say the same thing. We're looking to America at this point to stop this.
Oh my God.
Because in our country, we are screwed. That's what they say.
I'm going to ask you a pointed question. I'm going to ask you a very pointed question. What I don't think anything will, these people will never stop, but what will stop them?
What will stop them is a monkey wrench in their gear, in the gears of their machine. What a monkey wrench would look like, I can't say, but we're the only possible people at this point in the world that has such a monkey wrench, and we're the ones that need to use it. And these people are not infallible.
Where are the Christians?
Patrick,
where are the Christians? Where are the Christians on this? This is what drives me nuts about the Christian churches right now, because what you have explained to me is not a political, this isn't a political problem. You're talking about the whole thing. You're talking about God. You're talking about offending God. You're talking about cutting off God. You're talking about destroying mankind, not humanity, mankind created by God.
Yes.
Where are the Christians? Where are the Christian churches that are telling people how important the Declaration of Independence is, how important that this fight is, that they stand up and say no to this? Where is the fervor that was in the blood of our founding fathers? Where is it? Is it gone? Because, hell, I'll just leave the country. I'll just go somewhere else. Is it completely gone to the people listening now? Does it not exist? Because if it doesn't exist, why are we even talking about this? It's one thing to complain and bellyache about something. It's another thing to have a solution. Patrick, what is the solution?
In my opinion, at this point, it's local activism. If people want to do something constructive to clean this mess up, get into your local community and drive this garbage out of your community. Every community in America right now, sustainable development is everywhere. Agenda 21 is everywhere. It's in every single community. Get out, get in, and do something in your own local community. Now, a friend of mine told me not too long ago, very wise here, if you don't have a seat at the table, you are what's for dinner. Let us sink in, folks. God, that's it.
Hey, yeah. Patrick, is this too much to say? Is this too strong a statement to say? If I said, ladies and gentlemen, every time you see Agenda 21, every time you see sustainable development, you should be thinking that that is the plan of Lucifer. Every time you see it. Is that too strong?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen who sit there and clutch your Bible and pray every day and think that they're in the army of God. Okay, you are. You're commissioned. What are you going to do? Do we believe in God? Do we have faith in God? Is there any faith left in this country? I know that there is. I know that there is in you. I know there is. And that's where we must start. Some fervor, some conviction must be resurrected, really, in the American people. Some people that will reject all this crap. We're too busy with transgenders teaching our children about sex in school to wake up to the plan. They are putting a noose around your neck, a spiritual, physical, all-comprehensive noose, orchestrated by Lucifer himself. Patrick, go ahead. We got a couple of minutes. I'm ranting. This gets me so fired up. The last 2 minutes is yours, my friend. It's been so great to have you.
I appreciate it. I'm glad you're fired up, Daniel. I mean, if anybody would be, I would expect it to be you. But you're right. What you say is right. People need to get up off their couch and quit hiding, kind of hiding in the dark, if you will. This is not a Sunday afternoon football game that you just, pound your fist and yell at the TV or whatever. This is real life. And, if you don't care about yourself, that's your privilege. If you don't care enough for yourself to do anything about this, that's fine. What about the other people in your life? Would you be willing to defend your children? Would you be willing to defend your family? How about your grandchildren? I think most people would say, yeah, I would. Well, do it for them. If you don't do it for yourself, do it for them at least, because they live in this country. They're part of this. They're going to go down the tubes with us. We can help them out a little bit if we start doing something right now.
Patrick, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Technocracy.news is the website. Technocracy Hard World Order is the new book. Very important information, ladies and gentlemen. Patrick is a very central key researcher. And I would say, ask yourself this at least once a week. What have I done for my republic today or this week? What have I done? What one thing have I done for my republic this week? Patrick, God bless you, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you next week. More great guests. God bless you, Patrick. Thank you.